We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
At the 19, McCord over the middle. Harrison Jr. again down the sideline. Maserati Marr.
Draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Let's talk to Joshua Perry. You say, well, why would you talk to Joshua Perry? Well, why not? Because he's an analyst for NBC Sports and Stadium. He's also
a former
Ohio State linebacker, member of the 2014 National Championship team, on Twitter at RIP_JEP. And he is with us on the Score Hotline. And that is brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Joshua, hello.
Today
we are doing great, man. Thank you so much for answering the call and being on the show. I'm looking forward to hanging out on Stadium on Friday. I got a lot to ask you, but you know how Bears fans are. You've been in this town long enough to figure it out. Marvin Harrison Jr. is someone that I don't think will be available for the Bears at 9, but if he were available, is he the type of player that Bears fans should be excited about?
I don't think you could pass on him if he's there at 9. I think the value would be immense. And, yes, you should be excited. Watching Marvin Harrison Jr. is really interesting because when I flip on the tape, obviously, you see some of the circus catches. I think he's got some of the best body control from a wide receiver we've seen in a really long time. He catches just about everything that's thrown his way. But he's not an elite separator, and that's probably the biggest knock that I would have on him. And I'm not sure if it's just releases. I think he's got enough speed, but there are some routes where he certainly was covered and he just had to make a really good catch. But the thing that I know that translates is in the NFL, this is a contested catch league. There are tight windows and you have to be able to fight through traffic. So he's done that enough to where I know even if he's not going to be an elite separator in the NFL, he's going to be an elite catcher of the ball, which is the first thing you want. But the other thing that you get, and I don't know how many people know this, but obviously with that being my alma mater in Ohio State and getting to know Marv, like, he was a guy who would show up at the practice facility at 11 p.m. and they had an automated jugs machine and he would just put the footballs in there and he would catch them until like midnight, 1 a.m. And you figure for a guy who's that athletically gifted, who already had cemented one of the top spots in the NFL draft coming out of last year, to continue to put that work in, you know he's going to do that at the next level. So to me, he is a can't-miss type of guy, not only because of the skill set, but because of the fact that he is a worker, and he's going to fit in every locker room because he's going to come in day one, be extremely humble, and figure out a way to get on the field as early as possible.
I always am interested in positional versatility when it comes to the NFL. You talk about it being a contested catch league. It is also one of very defined roles depending on the offense that's run. Between the X receiver, the Z receiver, or the flanker, and those guys that will be specifically slot-only types, where do you think, watching the way he's been deployed, he's going to be most comfortable against NFL competition?
I think he'd be most comfortable as an outside receiver. And we've seen him run basically every route in the tree from there. You see him come inside on slant routes. He can, deep drags over the middle. He's a guy who can get vertical for sure. He can run the corners of posts. So I think that's where he would be. Putting him in the slot, I think he'd be a little bit out of position. But Ohio State had to do that sometimes because they had to move him around. He was a guy where if you lined up on the line of scrimmage, you knew that you're probably going to get press coverage with a safety rolled over the top of him. The ability for him to line up off the ball and then to be able to move him around a little bit to where he did have to do some releases from in the slot. He had to do releases from coming across the formation. It gives you confidence that he's a guy who understands where his piece fits in terms of the playbook, and it gave him a little bit more diversity there. But naturally, I think he fits in on the outside.
What did you think of his choice to not deal with the combine?
I mean, if you're him, why? right? And it's an interesting thing because I think as fans, we want to see the guys go out there. And we're so used to seeing it. But once you take a step back, like a lot of it is made for TV productions for people like me and you to be able to have something to talk about. The NFL teams know exactly who he is because they've done their homework on him, number one. Number two, he said, I'll make myself available to the teams who, you know, they want to work out with me, the teams that want to interview with me. That's perfectly fine. But to go out there and to run and to test and do the whole dog and pony show, it's not something I want to be a part of. I think that's smart. You know, you can actually focus on training as a football player. The thing that I learned from the pre-draft process is guys come into the league behind the eight ball because you spend time, and I went to Exos in Florida, so you spend time down there, and they're teaching you how to do a stance for a 40, and they're teaching you the mechanics of running for that event. They're teaching you how to do, you know, the 5-10-5, and in between all this, you're asking the question, okay, but when do I get to do my position drills? Like, when am I going to catch a football? When am I going to line up and do linebacker drills? And there's not a lot of that. And I think the benefit that Marv has is the fact that his training has been geared to what he's going to do in the fall on the field and not a 2-3 month stretch of how am I going to run the fastest time in the 40. I tell everybody, if you got a question about his speed, they got GPS data available for everybody, it seems like nowadays. Just go look that up and flip on the game tape and see if it matches up. But otherwise, like for him, for Caleb Williams, who decided that he was going to do it a little bit non-traditionally, I understand because those are two of the top guys in the draft. The teams know exactly who they are, and the teams who would have the ability to draft them can certainly have a private workout with them.
Do you think that this is changing with the fact that now kids are walking in, you know, the top 10, 15, maybe even top 20 picks are walking in as full-fledged millionaires? So do you think that we're going to see this type of thing continue where Caleb Williams, I thought, was right? I mean, there's a lot of tape. Go look at the tape if you want to learn what type of quarterback I am. Marvin Harrison Jr., I thought, was right in saying, I'm going to go work on football stuff. Will we see this change the way that the combine works?
Yes, and I think it only applies to, you know, the top handful of guys. I mean, you know, like Drake May even showed up and did some of the stuff he didn't throw in his workout. But, like, you know, your fourth and fifth and sixth quarterback are probably going to have to go out there and still work out, right? Like, there's only a couple wide receivers that could get away with only running a 40 and not doing drills or not doing anything at all. Most of these guys are really battling for draft slotting. But when you're talking about two guys who they said if they were eligible to come out a year ago would have been top 10 picks anyway, it makes no sense for them to do that. And the combine really is one small piece of a bigger picture too. I've mentioned private workouts and team visits, but I think those are probably more valuable to teams because you get guys in more of an intimate setting, one-on-one. You can really script up the workout to showcase things that you have questions about instead of having to go through a script of stock drills that you want to see everybody do. You're dealing with a different kid to the point of some of these guys coming in as full-fledged millionaires. You are dealing with a different type of kid, and I think there is some counseling that probably needs to go on from the side of the athlete to say, like, yeah, you made your little millions in college, and that's perfectly fine. You have an opportunity to do something generational, so don't let that get in the way of being a really good player at the next level.
Joshua, I've seen a lot of rookie wide receivers in NFL training camps, some first round, some well further down the draft ladder. And the adjustment for so many of them is understanding you are not entitled to a free release off the line anymore. And then I hear you laughing already, but the number of stack sets and bunch sets and diamond sets that are used to at least get one guy enough of a free release is all in fashion. But when you see guys staying after an NFL practice and working with the jujitsu or the sort of basketball moves of the false step and the lean in a direction after the snap, that the art of it really comes with understanding that guy is going to punch you in the chin and you aren't entitled to just run free down the field like you did in college. What separates somebody like Marvin Harrison, who I know knows that? He's got enough people in his family telling him, man, this is how it's going to be when you're doing this to make a living. What separates the guys that really understand how to do that and those who don't?
Well, it's an interesting thing, too, just like to touch on some of the college offenses. I don't think they do a lot of guys a lot of favors as they transition into the NFL. I mean, you mentioned just from what they do on the outside with the receivers to try to get some free entry. Like, you know, coordinators in the NFL, they're not doing that. They don't have the ability to do some of the things, especially with the way that the hashes are in college, where you can get a true wide side of the field. Whereas in the NFL, you know, a lot of the games played in the middle of the field there. As I start to really diagnose the wide receivers, it comes down to detail. And I think that there are a lot of players that are extremely talented. And so they can get away with a false step at the line of scrimmage. They can get away with not selling a route at the top because they're a great player and they're going against a guy who's not ever going to play in the NFL. Whereas you get into a talent-equated league, the things that matter aren't necessarily, do I have the burst off the line of scrimmage? Am I fast coming out of the break? It is, how do I sell this route? Like, if I'm a wide receiver coach, I'm telling guys, I need your releases to tell the defensive back something about the route, but I need you to lie about it, right? Like, I need you to tell them the wrong thing so then you can create that separation.
That's what Keenan Allen does. Like, people need to understand that, like, that when people talk about how what Keenan Allen is so great at doing is every movement matters, and every movement that is being processed by the opponent is showing them something that they shouldn't register the right way.
Yeah, I feel like you got to be a great liar as a football player a lot of times. And Keenan Allen is a perfect example. I actually played with him when I was with the Chargers. And I think that the reason why I think he's a really attractive receiver at the stage in his game is not predicated off of being like a super speedy guy. Like those guys we see, they drop off of a cliff when that speed starts to leave them. He is a route technician. He is a guy who knows how to sell a route. And so I think, again, with Marv, like, you ask the question, is he an elite separator? It's like, not always, but he does know the detail things. I think there are some things that he could even clean up to make his game better, but that's what you rely on. And ultimately, I think that's where you get confidence. It's for me, you know, not to punch down on a guy, but like Kadarius Toney coming into the league, and a lot of people thought he was a can't miss, and a lot of it was because of the athletic skill. Then you get in the league and he's not a great concentrator. He doesn't sell routes and he doesn't catch the ball consistently. Those are the things that kill you.
Joshua also does a show called Red Corner, Blue Corner with Jake Butt over at Stadium, which is amazing, where you have Michigan and Ohio State going head-to-head. Try to take your bias out of this. What do you think of J.J. McCarthy, his name starting to be mentioned as, well, maybe he's the second quarterback that's taken this year?
So J.J. is one of the most polarizing, I think, draft prospects at this point. He is a guy who's got the right type of build in terms of height. He bulked up a little bit before the combine, kept that weight on for his pro day. He has really good movement skill. And I don't think it was showcased because Michigan's running a really pro-style offense, so it's a lot of, you know, turn around, hand the ball off. They're running some play action. But if you get into the nitty-gritty of the tape, he can run, he can extend plays, he can throw on the run. These are all things that you like. He's got a really strong arm. He can get the football down the field. I even saw him hit some windows that not a lot of quarterbacks were hitting in college football. They just didn't ask him to do it a ton. And so I think the lack of proof of concept is what's bothering some people. And quite frankly, like, his bad games are really bad. Against TCU, he was awful in some moments. Against Penn State, like, you know, he was a little bit hobbled, but they couldn't throw the ball. And part of it was because of him. So they had to run it a ton. Against Maryland this past year, it wasn't a great game for him. He threw three interceptions against Bowling Green, which is like an awful game. And so there are some misses on there that you have to ask questions about, but he's also a guy who had one of the highest completion percentages in college. You know, he was able to push the football down the field. He's not afraid to take the play that's just the easy, smart play and keep things moving. And then ultimately, I think he'll be able to showcase more of his movement skill in the NFL, and that's what evaluators are looking at.
As someone who went through the draft process, who played in the NFL, if you could offer a piece of advice to people who are going to be drafted, what would it be about their beginning of their NFL experience?
Come in with no expectations. And I think that's like what you should do anytime you're entering a new phase of your life. But, you know, guys come in and they declare what they want to do. And I'm here for all the manifesting and whatnot. But it is not an easy process. And you're going up against guys who are way more veterans, so they know a lot more than you. And these guys also have obligations that they need to check for. And, you know, they want to make sure that they can protect that. And so as a young player, I think you have to shape your mind to say, I don't have expectations about this. And I'm going to say yes to every opportunity that's out there. So, hey, we're going to run extra drills after practice. Yes. We're going to watch extra tape. Yes. Hey, want to throw you on special teams. And it's probably not something you did in college because you were one of the best players. Yes, absolutely. I'm going to do it. And those are the guys who typically find success with themselves. And then there's a level of patience that you have to have, too, because nothing's going to happen on your timeline, and that's perfectly fine because it's not about what happens today and tomorrow and the next day. It's about what can happen for you, after 4 or 5 years when you get to sign that next contract. So just one day at a time, no expectations for yourself.
Yeah, Joshua, does that have to do with having a little one, too, Joshua?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, one day at a time, no expectations. That is like the best advice that I can give myself right now.
It's better advice than I think you even know. Joshua Perry, thanks so much for taking time for some of your expertise today. This is awesome.
I appreciate you guys. Take care, and hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.
You will. That is Joshua Perry of NBC Sports Stadium. Cool stuff.
Yeah, he's a really sharp guy. He still hosts the rally with Russ. So they're like boys. And then I went over there and hung out on the rally, and I'm like, wow, this guy is sharp. We have got to get him on the score. And like, we've got to get, because he can talk about a lot of stuff. But we even had a very fun like crossover. It was like we were kind of getting to know each other. And he's like, so like, where'd you come from? What do you do? I was like, oh, I covered the Bears for a while and blah, 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 blah. And then we realized that we had Bob Babich in common. It's a very interesting conversation.
Yeah. I would be intrigued to know his thoughts on the erstwhile defensive coordinator Bobby Babich.
You got to get his co-host on here too, Jake Butt. Maybe we could ask him about JJ McGuffin. He's a former Michigan guy.
Jake's a good dude too, and apparently he is more of a donut lunatic than I am. When you're built up like him, it's easier to do it. But we did it. We did a show together, and one of the crew, I think, had brought in Huck Finn.
Okay.
So he walked past, and he's like, guys, you can't have donuts here because I'm going to eat them. And
at least he warned you.
Yeah, but he's sitting there, and like he's finishing a donut, and he's like, I'm going to go get another one. And so right before the show started, he's like, man, donuts are great. And I was like, yes, they are. And Huck Finn are very, very good. So, yeah, there's some really good people over there. And they do a ton of football. So those guys are fun. And they having a show that's based in the rivalry of Ohio State and Michigan is hilarious.
Our draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. And I should mention as well that tonight, the Cubs are back home at Wrigley for the series opener against the Marlins. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:05. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer on the call, first pitch 6:40. And you can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. We will discuss a terrific Cubs performance yesterday by a completely unexpected Cubs performer. Bernstein and Holmes next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
Here comes the two-strike pitch. Check swing. He went too far. Strike three. Wesneski gets a big strikeout. He works a 1-2-3. It's his game to win. Why not be fired up?
Probably our best pitching performance of the year, considering everything that, his travels and getting up at the crack, when it was dark out, really, 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a flight out here. So he was tired, and just the combination of the pitches and the intensity and the travel, the lack of sleep. But he delivered a poor performance that we needed, and he got us, to get us into the ninth inning. Just a really great performance.
That man got up at the crack.
Yeah, I know what Craig Council wanted to say.
He wanted to say the crack of dawn, and then he realized it wasn't because it was before then, and it was already dark. The guy had like an hour of sleep, if that. And to call it the pitching performance of the year so far, it's really not an exaggeration because of how they needed it after the disappointment of the previous game, because of being really having no pitching left. And here this guy shows up and had it and did it. And it was just fabulous. So congratulations to Hayden Wesneski. And here is hoping that whatever he's been trying to fix over the last calendar year is getting there in pitch lab.
Well, I mean, he was the guy that we were all talking about coming out of spring training last year.
He was the guy after the Efros trade that was supposed to be the guy who was the biggest deal in it.
Yeah, look at this sweeper that he's developed and Wesneski and all the other stuff. So if he was able to find himself in the minors, then I salute that. I'm all for that. And they definitely needed it. When you talk about a travel day, when you're coming back and you're flying across the country to go ahead and play the next day, like, you have to have performances like that that are going to allow for your bullpen to rest a little bit. And they got that from him.
Everything they've been going through, whether it was the injury to Steele, the injury to, say, a Suzuki, and the fact that they're, you know, working, they have the third baseman who's trying to learn the position at the major league level, made another nice play yesterday, yep. By the way, continues to show off that arm. And as he develops confidence in the release point, that is definitely a plus-plus third base arm if he can get all the footwork right everywhere else. So
there are still some throws that you see, yeah, where you go, one, you don't have to throw it that hard, and maybe he'll figure that out, where his clock will slow down a little bit and allow for him to just be more comfortable making the throws. He's been bailed out a couple of times over at first base.
Oh, no doubt. And I think too, it's also the timing of the throw will relax when he steadies the positioning of his feet to allow him to field the ball in more of a rhythm. Because a couple of times he's walked himself into a lack of balance.
Right.
And you can't do that, because then, I mean, your arm can make up for some of that stuff, but then you have the volatility of not just the velocity, but changing arm angles and having it sail on you, which is all kinds of problems.
So great for Hayden Wesneski, like, to be able to prove yourself in front of a new manager and go out there and really, like, help the team. Players always talk about that sort of thing. This was an actual example of it. The team needs help. We've been in these extra inning games. We're out of arms. Guys need a day off. Can you eat some innings? Not only am I going to eat innings, I'm going to be dominant in these innings. It just makes a world of difference the way that they had to win that game yesterday.
I want to mention, too, that we have something very special going on tonight that,
yes,
members of this show and a lot of people at the station are going to be a part of an annual, very special event. And it is the Charity Poker Championship that benefits Camp One Step and kids with cancer and leukemia through the Camp One Step programs. It is tonight. It is 6:00 at Galleria Marchetti. I cannot wait to be a part of it again. We're looking forward to having a very exciting room of players, spectators, high rollers. I've already had some people reach out to me and say, oh, yeah, is that tonight? Can I still do it? I have been reassured that you can. We are able to add a table or two at the door if you want to be a part of this event tonight. We are going to be eating and drinking and partying and, most importantly, playing Texas Hold'em Poker as an official World Series of Poker play-in tournament. The winner goes to the WSOP in Las Vegas. And you say, well, what else is going on? Well, we have what are called celebrity bounties, special prizes attached. When you knock out one of our celebrity bounties, one of whom is Lawrence Holmes. The list includes at the moment Richard Roper of the Chicago Sun-Times, the always dangerous Marley Caden, the Emmy Award-winning contributor to CBS News Money Watch, and like Lawrence Holmes, an adjunct professor at DePaul.
The Black Widow.
Yeah, she's just dangerous, or as she's been referred to as the Enchantress, that you look down and all your chips are gone and you say, what happened? They must have cast a spell.
Yeah, she's a much better poker player than you is what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly the issue. Danny Parkins is going to come over when their show ends. Matt Spiegel is going to be a bounty. Shane Reardon is going to be a bounty. Our old friend Teddy Greenstein has volunteered. Also, Joe Scales, who is big in the world of poker. He's president of Ante Up magazine and has got a lot of friends in the industry, so he is going to be a part of things. And a big thank you. If you are a Chicago poker player, you know Jason Finn, who is the host of Chicago's only televised poker show, the Windy City Poker Championship on NBC Sports Chicago, founder of the Chicago Poker Club. He's influential and instrumental in helping put this event together, so we look forward to seeing him tonight. We're all getting together to help the kids. So if it's a last-minute thing, you say, hey, you know what? I may stop down there and sample some whiskey and some beer and enjoy the taco bar and the pizza and the s'mores and everything else. Come on over. Galleria Marchetti, cards in the air at 6. And I can't
wait. When you guys started this, did you think it would turn into this?
No, we had no idea. And this is what got me involved in the organization. When 20 years ago, the junior board decided to do a little event at the Hard Rock Hotel that now I think is the Pembry Hotel at the Carbide and Carbon building on Michigan.
That's and Batman's house.
Yeah, we had no idea. We had absolutely no idea that it would turn into the play-in event that it's become. We've had people finish in the money and actually make money in Las Vegas, and it's become a tentpole of fundraising to help kids with cancer and leukemia be empowered to take on the world and encouraged and to enjoy the simple joys of childhood through our program. So I can't wait to see everybody tonight.
I always look forward to it just because it's a lot of fun. You're working for a great cause and people have a good time, and it allows you to, you know, I enjoy playing poker. I don't play it very often, but I love playing it, and I love people trying to figure out, you know, are you playing it seriously? Yes, I'm always playing it seriously. So it's fun when I win on a bluff. That I love that.
It's also the speed at which the blinds tend to raise, and the way that it levels the playing field. That even if you have professional players in the room at these charity events where we only have the room for a certain amount of time and people get blinded out real fast, we've got all kinds of rebuys, of second chance raffles. Like, the cool thing is your night's almost never over. Even if you're a high roller, you can go into the main tournament. And there's all kinds of ways to keep playing and keep helping the kids. But even if you are, you want to take a little break or you want to hang out and get some food, Histrionic Brew Lab is going to be there sampling all their awesome beers. One of my absolute favorite beers in the world, Histrionic Brew Lab's sour beer called Eaten by a Bear.
Yar.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's so good.
A texter asked, what does being a bounty in poker means? It means if you knock me out of the tournament, you get a prize for just that. Like if I go all in and you go all in and you win, you get a prize for that.
Announced.
You don't have to win the whole tournament.
And we shame our bounties mercilessly.
Yes, you should.
And that's part of the point, is when a bounty gets knocked out, the announcement has to come and there is a big celebration. And then you take that bounty's tag and you walk it over to the bank, and the bank gives you your bounty, gives you your prize for knocking that person out.
I always, because I'll have a lanyard, I always throw my bounty on the table when I go all in, so that the person that, if they beat me, they can just pick it up and walk over there and get a prize.
And then you or the dealer will raise a hand and say, we've got a bounty that's been knocked out, and then we point at you and we laugh, especially if it's Shane. Although I will say Shane did really well last year. Roper usually hangs fairly late.
Well, Roper's like a pro player, so.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't count. Him and Teddy. Like, those are like real players.
I know, but it's hard. Like, I'm telling you, the blind structure levels the playing field. Anybody can win this. We have had first timers. We had at one year, I remember it's somebody who had like learned how to play poker a week before.
Oh, awesome.
And he's like, oh, this, I'm going to Las Vegas? Yes, you are. We'll
yeah, you're
going to
be in the World Series of Poker.
Right. Are you kidding? You'll
be on TV.
No, we are not kidding you. Like, oh, boy. Yeah, it's fun stuff. And it's tonight. And I look forward to it every year. And the outpouring of the number of listeners to the score, to this show, to all the shows, and people who've been doing it for years and been a part of it for years. A lot of familiar faces. There'll be a lot of people. And if you want to learn more about Camp One Step, we'll have board members here. We will have all all of our leadership of the organization is going to be there. So if you have any questions and want to know more about what we do to help these kids, this is part of us evangelizing on behalf of a cause that's really important to me.
When we come back, let's go back over something that was said on the show yesterday, because if you missed it, we had Dawn Staley on the show, and she had some interesting things to say about Caitlin Clark. And if we have time, there's an update to the Caitlin Clark Nike story that we need to discuss. Next here on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Jason Goff is here in studio with us.
We go from Zion Williamson, John Morant, to spinning on finely tailored suits.
Hey. Getting yelled at for dancing.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The Bernstein and Holmes show at its finest.
Yeah, that's right, what we do, Jay. That's what we're doing over here.
I got a little anxious there before the pick, but I think more than anything, just grateful and lucky to have my family here, my friends over there, coaches up here, so... I think just enjoying the moment. I've dreamed of this moment since I was in second grade, and it's taken a lot of hard work, a lot of ups and downs, but more than anything, just trying to soak it in.
That was Caitlin Clark on ESPN after being the first overall draft pick. She's had to deal with a lot of stuff, and even the most usual mundane aspects of the job of a star basketball player take on, she is asked to do more and deal with more than other people because people won't stop being creepy and weird.
Yeah, I mean, there was the unfortunate situation with Greg Doyle yesterday that has been talked about and should continue to be talked about as far as interactions with female athletes and women overall. But, it's just wild, and it's, it kind of feels like the more you hear Greg try to apologize that he still doesn't get it.
I agree. He doesn't really understand what was creepy about it. It wasn't just awkward and uncomfortable. It was gross, and it's something that this veteran would never, ever, ever have done with a male athlete, and it's too bad. Too bad for everybody involved. It sucks.
It is, but there was some good. Yesterday, we had Dawn Staley on the show, and please go listen to the whole interview. Ray even cleaned it up when she dropped a couple of times because of the sidelines. It's great, but she talked about why Dan asked a great question on, with so many people wanting to throw a little bit of shade at Caitlin Clark, Dawn Staley has been like, I am not going to, and she explained to us why.
I don't think other people are hating on Caitlin Clark. I think it was more respect for the history of the game. So I think it comes from that perspective, because when you think of some of the greats, because you know, when you throw around the greatest college basketball player ever, I think of Breanna Stewart, who won 4 championships. I do. Like, I'm never going to forget that, because she banged it on our head all 4 years. And then when I think about Caitlin Clark, I do think she's one of the greatest. Like, she's the greatest of her time. That's how she's the greatest of her time. And I want basketball, women's basketball, to grow. And I'm not too shy about saying why it grows. She's made it grow over the past 2 years. And I'm actually going to go back to her freshman year when she was killing then, when nobody wanted to talk about Caitlin Clark because – you know, Paige Beckers was all of that, deserving so. But I saw Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark won my Dawn Staley Award in her freshman year when everything was about Paige Becker. And it's nothing to take away from Paige Becker, but it's everything to say that we need to make sure that we're telling the stories of our entire game. So sometimes you have to go against the masses, to really cut down and say what's happening, you know, in real time. Caitlin Clark is the sole reason why viewership has shot through the roof for our game. Sole reason. And I think the decision makers are following suit and making sure that other games are being played besides Caitlin Clark, because if you play Caitlin Clark, you're going to run up against somebody that you might find as pretty good. You know, we were pretty good. Like, over 18 million people saw our national championship game. They tuned in to see Caitlin Clark, but what did they get? They got Caitlin Clark, and they got South Carolina. They got Camilla Cardoso. They got Ashton Watkins. They got Malaysia Fuwale. They got Tessa Johnson. They got a number of players that they can now cheer for.
Now, you had some insight into those comments, Dan.
Well, it's not my personal insight. I was sort of eavesdropping on the Twitter conversations. I eventually had to mute the conversations because, as they often do, things get too weird and too out there, and then you just start things. The Russian bots take over and the blue checks take over and everything.
And there's
gross.
A lot of people that want to connect Caitlin Clark to something that she has never expressed any wanted connection to.
Of course not, but people are projecting so many things on her because she's famous, and you wonder how Taylor Swift feels sometimes about some of this stuff. And the one response was, that was classic Philly shade disguised as compliment. That was her saying all these nice things, but saying that allowing you to fill in the blank. Who won the championship, allowing you to say, well, it's easy for her to say all these nice things because they just finished an undefeated season and won the championship. There's sort of a kill 'em with kindness kind of thing in there. And I don't necessarily agree.
I don't think that's it at all.
I just thought it was. See, I take Dawn Staley at her word. I don't think Dawn is being disingenuous.
And I
don't think there's anything sort of oily about what she had to say. But there were some people reading that into it.
I think she gets it. I think Dawn knows that there's going to be a downturn in viewership next year because Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese aren't there. You know, there's going to be a downturn in this thing. She's being grateful for the elevation of the game, and you can tell that she clearly, like, they have a relationship. You win someone's award, you know, they clearly have a relationship. So seeing Dawn want to be a steward of the game, it's one of the reasons why I really like her. It's why I compare what she does on the college level to what Greg Popovich does on the pro level. Mm-hmm. People want to be around her. People want that type of positivity and support. And look, this is one of the most competitive players that's ever played the game. She wants to win, and she's winning. But I think the thing about Dawn is that she understands that there's room for everyone. And that's what she keeps doing. She keeps making room for everyone to have their say and their point of view, which is cool. The other thing that we got into yesterday, we were talking about the shoes. And you're right. There are a lot of young boys and even pros that love Sabrina Ionescu's shoes. Caitlin Clark got a big deal from Nike, and Shams was on Up and Adams talking about all the people who were trying to bid on this deal and how it got done with Nike.
So she met with three finalists, Under Armour. Stephen Curry was part of that pitch meeting. I'm told the plan in that scenario would have been for her to be a part of Under Armour and Curry Brand and possibly wear Curry Brand. So Curry Brand is basically a standalone, kind of like what Jordan mm-hmm. Brand is for Nike for Stephen Curry.
Smart by the Curry team, sure.
And so Steph Curry actually FaceTimed into the meeting, talked to Caitlin Clark, talked to her parents.
You got to show up in person, Steph. Like,
well, he's also got a season.
Seal the deal. Okay,
there's a lot going on.
Got it.
But, and I think Caitlin Clark, Stephen Curry, this is not the end for them. I think they might be participating in some shootouts down the line.
Ooh, fun.
In All-Star Weekend, so we'll see about that. Adidas was another company that met with her. But Nike came over the top. Like you said, 8-figure deal. I'm told it's 8 figures. I set it on Run It Back. I'm not a math major. That's $10 million at the least. I'm told it's well beyond $10 million.
Okay, but eight figures, there's a big gap there. There's a big tax. There's like 19 tax brackets in to eight figures.
For
so
sure.
So we talk in...
I think it's fair to say that it's above $20 million. Now, how above is, you know, we'll see once we get the final numbers.
Shout out to our team.
I'm not one to speculate. Yeah, shout out to our team. Think about her business portfolio. Obviously, a lot has been made recently about WNBA salaries. Mm-hmm. But I will say her business portfolio off the court, she is making significant money off the court. And, you know, to get a signature shoe before you ever step foot on the pro level, that's a big, big deal.
Do we know how long the deal is?
It's a multi-year deal. So it's going to be at least 4 or 5 years. But she had been with Nike for NIL. And so there was already a familiarity there. She wore Nike at Iowa. She's been wearing Nike really all week at all these different things that she's been doing. So
And Prada.
The devil wears Nike. Indeed. That's one of the less flirtatious conversations that we've heard between Kay Adams and Shams Charania, who have this like Sam Malone, Diane Cheers thing going on. Like
they've got a moonlighting thing going on.
Yes, yes. We're aging ourselves, but like when is it going to happen? Awesome. I think the CC ones, is that what they're going to be, we presume?
Yeah.
Right? Whatever the CC
Love
ones are.
Love to see what they look like.
Can't wait.
It's a big deal, and I'm happy that she got it. And it's interesting because I think Cameron Brink she's Adidas. No, she's with Zach. She's New Balance.
New Balance.
Which is interesting because her godmother is Sonya Curry.
Ooh, I didn't know that. That is interesting.
Yeah, Sonya was at the draft.
I didn't know that was why. Okay.
I think it's that Cameron and Sonya were Cameron's mother and Sonya were teammates in college.
Makes sense.
Volleyball players, and I think that's what it was.
One last thought before we break, and back to Dawn Staley for one moment. I just had this in the back of my head, and the question of just how meaningful and how earnest her comments were about Caitlin Clark. There's a reason why I thanked Dawn Staley for what she said when asked by an Outkick troll about trans athletes in women's sports and how honest and open she was at a time where she knew that the question was not asked in good faith, the response was not going to be in good faith. She didn't care. And it didn't stop her from being on the right side of history in that regard and being empathetic in that regard. And that's a lot of my context when we ask about what she meant by those comments. I take her at her word because she has never been afraid of telling her truth.
Facts. Jason Leisure has questions for us, apparently.
Oh, God.
So we're going to try and answer them next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.